One of the words that we are using for this weekend, and I invite you to explore for yourself, is this word compulsion. Compulsion. And I read last night, I will read again today. This is from Bernd Norton, the first of the Eliots, T.S. Eliot's four quartets. And he's just praised stillness. He's just said, I'll read you that part. I've not planned on that, but I'll be spontaneous and do it. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. But neither arrest nor movement, and do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline, except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. In this realm, there is only the dance. Movement. Movement. All life. No life without movement. Those atoms got to move around. And yet, there's always the still point. Maybe tomorrow I'll get into the way I view that still point. I've done this with some of you on other retreats, so you're already familiar. He goes on and says, I can only say there we have been, but I cannot say where, and I cannot say how long, for that is to place it in time. So the irony is that in order to arrive here and now, we utilize time-space, right? Because time-space is this, our here and now is all related to time-space. It doesn't work without those quote, concepts, that construct of a mind. And yet, without the still point, there would be no experience of time space. So those, the physicists in you who are also philosophers, you can have a lot of fun with that, but not now. And so this inner, here's the compulsion part. The inner freedom from the practical desire. You know all the practical desires we have? Whether we need to do it right now or not, we look for practical desire. We feel good if we're doing something practical. There is a kind of compulsiveness that can arise. The practical desire itself is not the problem. It exists out there as if there's something practical to be done. But the desire is an inner experience. It's an inner experience. The inner freedom from the practical desire, the release from action and suffering. The suffering coming from doing, trying to get it right, being caught in our desire to have it right, being caught in our desire for it to not be. The release from action and suffering. Release from the inner, release from the inner. So the inner freedom from the practical desire, the release from action and suffering, release from the inner and outer compulsion, yet surrounded by a grace of sense, a white light, still and moving. Erebon without motion. Concentration without elimination. Erebon's a kind of a joy, a kind of a ecstasy, but not wild ecstasy. It's a particular kind of ecstasy, a kind of when I was talking earlier about joy, just a feeling the presence, being present, having a kind of joy. So surely everyone here realizes that you too have compulsions, right? Nodding. I want to see some head nodding if that's true. Good. I do too. And so then what becomes, what's the nature? This is an inquiry that you've probably not heard anywhere else. So what is that? How do we do this then? How do we move from this compulsion and not be controlled, not be compulsed by the compulsion? How do we have a compulsion arise and pass without taking birth in it? How do we have a desire arise and that desire not be a compulsion? That we have choice around of how to respond, you know, to cleaning up the kitchen, which I spent most of our hour and a half doing. A little bit of compulsion in that, because I did not want to finish our day and return to it. But I had space around that experience. I knew the choice I was making, and I weighed those choices. And I said, I think this will be better for my mind state. Have no idea if that's true, but I did have a considered, I thought that I could do or not do. You with me? And so, and the inner compulsion, this inner compulsion about ourselves first, to be a certain way, feel a certain way, that we got to get our feelings all right. That some way, if we just get the feeling just so, then everything will be okay. We idealize in this, the dependent origination sequence, you know, that because we have contact with something, and out of our ignorance, we have contact, and it feels pleasant or unpleasant. And this whole sequence begins such that we end up reifying, idolizing. We get very attached to having what we want. We're compulsively and wanting it. The inner experience is a belief that if I just have this, I'm going to be really happy. And then we get that, and then there's another problem or there's something else we want. And if there's nothing else arise, then we go, we're bored. So then we look for something, you know, because we have such a mistaken perception of boredom. Boredom is boring, but that does not necessarily make it unpleasant. That's an inner story. So this is the kind of thing that we're wanting to understand, how it is that when we encounter dukkha, the first noble truth that there is dukkha, that we have a second noble truth relationship with it, which is made up of inner and outer compulsion. Because we are grasping, our wanting to fix it, our wanting it not to be this way, our wanting to become something other, we're wanting to become, or we're wanting not to be. So the three parts of the second noble truth is that there is a cause to suffering, and that cause is tanha, thirst. Thirst is experienced as clinging. Thirst is experienced as grasping. Thirst is experienced as attachment. Thirst is experienced at tanha as a compulsion, an inner and outer compulsion. Another way to understand this that might, in our modern language, our modern psychological attitude that we have, whether we want to have a psychological attitude or not, it's very hard in the modern world not to have a psychological attitude. Maybe it was always that way, I can't say, but it certainly is now. And so how do we, I'm restless. Okay, I'm restless. That's enough. Why does this compulsion have to arise that I'm restless and now I must do something about it? Why do I have to do something about it? Maybe it's wise, maybe it's compassionate to do so. But wisdom and compassion are not compulsions. They're responsive. A compulsion is a reactive state of mind. Right? If you don't know that yet about your own compulsions, when your problem is eating out of the refrigerator late at night. You know not to do that. You know it's going to disturb your sleep. Who opens that refrigerator door? Compulsion. Compulsion doesn't need your participation, you may have noticed. You didn't agree to it. It just knocks you out of the way and opens the refrigerator door. You get in your mind, well, I've got to call my sibling. But you know, God, my sibling doesn't really want to talk to me. And she's just going to be mean to me. Who picks up the phone? Obligatory compulsion. Obligatory compulsion. Does obligatory compulsion have wisdom? I haven't found it, but maybe you will. Now, you can choose to do something because you're wanting to fulfill a sense of responsibility you have, but you can either have a choice about that. Yes, this feels wise. I know it's not going to be pleasant, but I'm choosing to do it, knowing if I'm conscious of the unpleasant and I can protect myself from that or not. When it's compulsive, you kind of throw yourself into the lion's den. You're emotionally inappropriately available. You don't have wisdom. You don't have perspective. The compulsion takes this away. It's a drive of, it's a reactive drive. It's a mind state drive in that way. So that's what we're looking at here this weekend, as understanding the way that we can have insight about these compulsions we have. And you could say, well, are compulsions neurosis? There can be neurotic compulsions, but we can have compulsions that I'm not a psychologist, but I've been very interested in psychology. And as I would understand that neurosis, it's not at the level of neurosis. It's ordinary compulsion. Ordinary compulsion. I think I have an article actually, or maybe in the book. Yeah, in the emotional. If someone could put this in the page, in Emotional Chaos to Clarity, I have a whole chapter on ordinary compulsion. So you can read about it in that way. So the freedom from the inner and the outer desire. In the way that the inner and outer desire, when we reify desire, when we start to clutch it, that's the taking birth that the Buddha talks about. And again, we all do this so often. It's really not hard to find examples in our own life. It's more difficult to watch it happen in real time and see it happen. It's even more difficult still to feel it, watch it happen, and in real time, and at the same time have compassion and for ourselves. Just like, oh wow, watch me doing this, even though I'm here and I'm knowing I'm doing this, but look how strong this compulsion is. And be curious about the compulsion and saying, well, do I have any choice? Or right after you've done it, did I have choice? Could I have choice in the future? Is there a possible future relationship that can be imagined where the compulsion is not the way it is now? You can open that refrigerator door and be saying, compulsion, 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 and then eat the ice cream or whatever it is your late night poison is. And in time, you can't stand that anymore, naming that compulsion. And it's not worth opening the refrigerator door. It's just not worth it. I can't go through that anymore. And that is what in Buddhism, they'll talk about disgust. You've watched it so many times. You just can't stand it anymore. It's a kind of a mysterious thing that happens with that. But it stops itself. You didn't say, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. You're not doing any of that kind of coaching yourself through. You're just being present for it. And you know it's suffering, and you just can't stand to do it anymore, and you just don't. Does that happen in the first week, month, year? Not necessarily. But with little things, it can happen faster than others because they're not so ingrained. Some of these compulsions are not so deep-seated Some are, they really are. And so oftentimes we don't know what to be mindful of. We don't, so as we're watching the compulsion, we start to see the inner experience that's the root of the compulsion. The amount of comfort that you're getting from opening that refrigerator door is so deep-seated. It's not you at all. It's this seven-year-old who didn't know, or this teenager who didn't know what to do, or the teenager who was told you're too large, and therefore the refrigerator was verboten, and it's like, this is your rebellion, all completely inappropriate now, but nonetheless, something to have great compassion with through our wisdom, through our acceptance of, course, we all have a past. And we're conditioned by that past. And the one who suffered that is not here now, but we carry their scars and wounds. And we can learn to carry those scars and wounds with so much more kindness and have so much more of a wise relationship, a kind of eribung without motion, a kind of joy without having to be getting something or getting rid of something, the joy of just being. Just being the mindfulness and the wholesomeness of the mind state. Just being, not wanting. This gets us into the third noble truth. And how do we get there? It's through the fourth noble truth, the Eightfold Path. So this is the territory we're in. If you don't like this use of the word compulsion, maybe you have a different word. Or maybe you don't want to take this part of the weekend. So you just don't, you take the parts of the practice that are being offered that are useful to you, that you feel comfortable with right now. And that's what you cultivate. You're in charge of your practice. The truth of that is why it's so important that each of us have dignity and integrity. Because we are in charge. If there's anybody going to make a choice, it's us. There's not anybody else. You can look around inside there. There's lots of what I call committee members in each of us. But there's no outsider that's going to make the choice. You make the choice. And the best I am able to make this choice is because I am present. And I can feel the truth of this as best I am able. And I'm being honest with myself. I have integrity in living up to my values. I'm authentic. I am sincere. Not perfectly sincere. I'm not perfectly authentic. I get caught in, even all by myself, I can be in my persona. You know, just wandering around in one's persona all by oneself as though there were other people in the room. It's quite amusing to watch this. But you know it. So you know when you can't, when you don't feel authentic. And you're particularly with others, you can watch how compulsive it is to put on this persona. And it may not even be a persona that actually works very well with this particular person, but it is your persona and it's compulsive. So you put it on. Or it's someone that really, there's no need for that much persona with them. You're not needing anything from them. They've not got this judging vibe about them. So you could be more regular, your old you. And yet, here I am, you know. That's compulsion, you know. That's compulsion. But we're not judging. We're not comparing it. We're seeing whether it's skillful or not skillful. Does it serve us or not? Does it bring a sense of well-being or not? But the person who does that assessment, that person, that capacity within us has to be rooted in a kind of authentic sincerity, you know. Otherwise, we won't do it. We'll get all squirmy in various ways. We'll go into that, you know, go traveling down that river of denial, not the one in Egypt, but the one inside, and so forth and so on. And again, I laugh so much because to hold it lightly, you know, but with great sincerity, but hold it lightly. All of this, I'm going to straighten me out. How far has it gotten you thus far? So we learn to be, to have integrity, to hold ourselves accountable, which is the subject of next week's weekend up in BCIMS online, putting in a plug. But, so we do learn how to hold ourselves accountable, but it's not harshly. It's not harshly accountable. When we're young, it's different to work with ourselves. There can be a fair amount of having to be. We don't know how to be compassionate yet. Maybe I was very harsh with myself. I've apologized to that young boy in me so many times. So many times. I was very, very harsh. I was in a very challenging situation, and I had to really be careful. And when I wasn't careful, it did not turn out well. And so I started out being quite harsh with myself. And I'd learned gradually over many years to not be harsh. Many years. I'm quite happy to report this way because I have no, that was my experience. So that's my experience. Why should I be ashamed of it, or why should I be bothered by it? I'm very regretful about that, in terms of that little boy that was there inside, because I had a kind of override. I overrode a lot. And I can see that was not right. But now the fruit of that, being mindful of that override, is happening right now in this moment of talking to others, of you who might be overriding in a way you don't need to do anymore. All the things, all these years of decades of my being of use to others. And I learned that in part because of my being unskillful. Do you see? It's not that the unskillful is an event. It was an outer experience. But what my inner experience of that is over time was transformative to some degree. Because I am quite sincere. I know I'm sincere, but how well I can do, you know, varies depending on circumstances. But I know that, and that is my integrity of this. So am I free of compulsions? No, but am I more free than I was? And are the worst of those compulsions released, as best I could determine the worst of them? Yes, in that way. And so in you may have already, you come from a kind of conditioning that led you to be one way, and you're so much better than you were in that way in terms of kindness to yourself or kindness to others, self-understanding, all of these different ways, but maybe you haven't recognized it. And so you haven't really, that there's all these crops that you've already planted and grown, but you haven't yet harvested because you didn't realize they were there, and you didn't realize, or you didn't realize, and or you didn't realize, oh, these two can be harvested. But they can. They can. That's the wise use of story. The unwise use of story is when we repeat ourselves over and over again. The thing that for many years went around the IMS community was that you're walking down the road, and you fall into a hole, and you go, oh, I fell into that hole. And then you walk down the road and you fall in it again. And this whole thing about how you finally learned, first you avoid the hole and go, well, that's hard to do. Then finally you just walk down another road. And that whole story about that is dealing with the compulsion. Why would you walk down that road again when you know you will fall into the hole? That's the compulsion. Are we still with me here? Nod heads, please. Okay. So now we're going to do our walking practice. And this walking practice is to, again, to be walking, to do the standing there at the beginning. And I am available to to know my compulsions. I'm available to know my compulsions. I'm changing my words here a bit. That's why I was hesitating. I'm available to feel compulsion. Let's get rid of the no and my, but I'm available to feel compulsion. And then you just walk. And you see if your mind pulls you out of your walking practice. And if so, was that compulsive? And then you get to the end of the walk. You feel yourself turning. Over half time, I note. I use the noting practice of turning, 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 because it starts pulling me back into the moment. And then you're standing there. You're going to walk down that same path this time. And you go, may I be aware? May I feel my compulsions? And then you just walk. You're just doing regular walking. You're not stepping into anything this time. You're just doing lifting, walking, lifting, moving, placing. That's the three step. That's one kind of three step. There's a three step. There's a three, four, five, and six different thing. I'm not trying to tell you which one to do. That's too much online. But and then you get to the end, turning, turning, turning. And then again, to this commitment being available to know what compulsion is. And the idea is that as you're walking, you see compulsion arise. And then you start to know compulsion as a phenomenon. And then you recognize when you're sitting, oh, this is just compulsion. And then after the retreat, when you're there, you know, with a friend or a family member, or you're there by yourself, and you do an act of compulsion, you go, ah, this is compulsion. This is compulsion. It's 11 o'clock at night, and you turn on whatever your addictive streaming thing is, when in fact you should rest. You turn it on that, you know, or whatever it may be. Oh, this is compulsion. I don't really have a weighted choice here. Something is there's some compulsion. So I'm not saying this is too late, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm doing it. And then I talk about, it's too late for me to be doing this. The commenting afterwards is not the same thing as the staying and feeling the compulsion. Again, you can ask questions when we get back from the walking about this. This is a whole exploration.